you have the right to remain silent. Anything you say can and will be used against you in a court of law. You have a right to an attorney prior to or during any question. If you can't afford one, the court will appoint one for you. Do you understand your rights?
And the wolf is at your door. Your running's over, that's for sure.
This episode of Real Life, Real Crime, the podcast may contain descriptions of acts of violence or that of a sexual nature and should be for people that are 18 years or older. Heed my warning, people. I do not get the facts of these cases off of the internet or from some television show. The facts I'm retelling you were presented to me by the victims of the crimes or the perpetrators who committed the crimes against the victims. My descriptions of the crime scenes, what I saw with my own two eyes. If you're going to get offended, please turn this podcast off now. Thank you. Hello, everybody, and welcome to this episode of Real Life, Real Crime, the podcast. As always, I'm your host, Woody Overton. And patrons, convicts, Apple subscribers, I love y'all. Hope you're enjoying your content and your perks and all that good stuff. I love all you lifers. And today I'm going to be continuing Scorched, the state versus Scott Peterson, that being the state of California. Listen, this case is so messed up. And so far, it looks like it's only scorched on one Scott Peterson side, right? So go back and listen to the other three episodes. And I'm going to continue to break this down step by step and tell you why I believe this would be the biggest fucked up case in U.S. history. And there's a reason I didn't get into it for all these years. And now, you know, with the new his hope that the LA Innocence Project took Scott's case up, and you know they got the court to submit one piece of duct tape that was found on Lacey's body. We'll get into that later on, but for DNA and all that, so it's back in the news. And then he did that first interview ever in 20 years from prison and all that, so it's back in the limelight. But I'm telling you Woody Overton's version from both sides, how it's scorched. And yes, up until this point, it's looking very, very bad for Scott from an investigator standpoint, right? I told you all the things, the little things, and some of the bigger things that just make it scores. I mean, Scott, it was no criminal mastermind, although he thought he was. He thought, if you believe he's guilty, up until this point, he thought he had an answer for everything, all right? So search is still going on. They held that initial press conference, and they interviewed him twice. Scott Peterson, interviewed by Modesto police. Okay, you know, that's up until December 26th. Well, on December 27th, the gloves are coming off now. Scott's done enough, and there's enough pieces of the puzzle that he's scorched where investigators like, you know what, can't get off of him. Now we got as much as we can get from witnesses and stuff up until this point. And the bad things that Scott said and his actions and what have you, and absolutely I would have done the same thing had I been the lead investigator on this case. And now he's refusing a polygraph also, although he agreed to take it initially. Now we're going to turn up the heat. And I don't know if it's necessary turning up the heat. We're going to continue our investigation, and we're trying. They were trying to get off of Scott, okay, but they can't because he's scorched everything, and it's looking bad for him, right? So what do? They go and get search warrants, and on December the 27th. Now look. Let's talk about search warrants for a second. Search warrants, you got to have probable cause to get a search warrant. You write up your search warrant, let's say like for the house. You can say, okay, I'm going to be looking for any signs of a crime scene, you know, struggle, blood, any type of evidence that could be used. I mean, you have to list out the things that you want. You can't go in there saying, you know, looking for and come out of there with a rocket launcher, right? That would be illegal for Scott to have because it doesn't have dick to do with Lacey. You have to list in your search warrant specific items that you're looking for or general items that you're looking for. But you got to have probable cause. I mean, you got to have a reason to get a search warrant. A search warrant has to be signed by a judge. You have to present these to a judge, and the judge has to say, yeah, this is fucked up enough where I'm going to give you boys this leeway. Go see if you can find any more evidence. So they do that. The detectives get search warrants signed, and they get search warrants for Scott's home, his business, and both of his vehicles. Now, when you go to serve search warrants, you are not going to just go back in and do it by yourself. Okay, as a detective, you've already looked around the home and stuff, but you hadn't tore it apart, and you hadn't gone over with a fine-tooth comb or his office and all this other stuff. You're going to bring in the crime scene techs and all that. So they get the search warrants, and they go and they execute them, or it's called serving them. And they serve the search warrants to Scott, and Detective Rocchini is the one that notified him of and served him with him. You know what Scott said? Where is the trust? That's what he said to the detective, okay? Where's the trust? That's all he said when they served him the search warrants. So during the search warrants, that's when the investigators found the umbrellas that Scott said he was going to store at the warehouse, and that as well as the tarp coverings in the backyard of the Petersons' home, and they were spread across several sheds, all right? They also found the empty tan tarp and the boat cover, which were in Scott's truck on the 24th. I told y'all about that. They saw them, and now they're seizing them, okay? And both the boat cover and the tarp have been placed under a leaky leaf blower in the garden shed. So he's taken them out of the truck. He's placed them in the garden shed under a leaky leaf blower. And they were soaked. Leaky leaf blower. Let me explain that. The leaf blower was gasoline operated, probably a mixture, y'all, but it gas and oil, but it had leaked all over the tarp and the boat cover. So much gasoline that these items had to be dried out for 2 days, and the gas smell was so strong that when also on search warrants, they brought in cadaver dogs, y'all. But the gas smell was so strong, they couldn't use the cadaver dogs at the house for 2 days, right? And even after the 48 hours had gone by, the scent of the gasoline confused the dogs, and they were unable to find anything. Okay, well, I've used cadaver dogs, and y'all, cadaver dogs are trained. They're not looking for Lacey scent specifically. They're looking for the scent of decomposing flesh, if you will, or a body. As soon as you die, your body starts to emit a certain odor that these cadaver dogs are trained to smell. They're not trained to sniff out dope. It's not like in the movies. It's not like a bloodhound where they're going to get an article of Lacey's clothing and put it up to the dog's nose and say, go find a boy, right? They're walking these dogs around to see if they hit or indicate at any point in an area where decomposing flesh would have been. All right. So now, remember Scott said that Lacey had been wearing all this jewelry, the diamond earrings and necklace and whatnot. And well, during the search warrant, they found that some of that jewelry was in fact inside of Lacey's jewelry box. Now, Scott had given his initial description of what Lacey was wearing, right? The black pants, white top, and even down to the shoes that she was wearing. That said she always wore these shoes on her walks. Well, during the search warrant, they find those shoes inside the house. Not looking good, Scott. The comforter on the bed, remember where the detective saw the impression of about a approximate 5 foot impression at the foot of the bed. They go in, they seize the comforter and they analyze it, or they look at it, and it had 2 drops of blood near the end of the bed, right? And that's where the detective saw the impression of what he thought would have been a body, and that's speculation on his part. But they tested it. Guess whose blood it was? Scott's. Now, if I bleed on my bed comforter, my wife's going to notice it because she makes it every day. She's going to wash it, right? Not looking good, Scott. Back on the house. On the walls of the house, Scott had 4 diplomas framed and hung up where he was displaying them. Well, guess what? 3 of them were fake, y'all. Why hang fake diplomas? Well, I don't know. But one of the diplomas was a bachelor's in religious studies, which Scott had bought on December the 16th for $269.70 from phonydiplomas.com. Y'all, he bought them on the 16th. She goes missing 6 days later. Okay? Scott explained that he said, oh, that was a gag gift from Lacey, right? But the diploma was purchased using Scott's credit card and addressed to him in the mail, all right? It later on, and I'm going to tell you about this girl, Amber Frey. They, prosecution side, later on they would say they thought that Scott purchased them and hung them because he wanted to show the diploma to his girlfriend, Amber Frey, right? So that was, and Amber Frey, later on, we'll get into it, had talked about how she wanted to go to school to study divinity. So that would fit in. Now, a sniffer dog, a bloodhound, basically, not a cadaver dog. The bloodhound, like I told y'all, you know, you get an article of clothing and they sniff it and try to find the person. So a sniffer dog was given some of Lacey's clothing and it followed the scent, her scent, into the middle of the street. Not down the sidewalk where she would have been walking. And it said that it indicated that Lacey most likely left the area in a car, not on foot. I don't know about that, y'all. I mean, defense, as they should have, is going to have a field day with that. But the boat, they searched it. In the boat, they found a rusted pair of pliers. He just bought this boat, okay? They found a rusted pair of pliers with a black hair stuck in them. It stuck in the pliers. And they tested it, and it, later on it was showed the hair was consistent with Lacey's hair. Lacey supposedly had never been in the boat, and we'll get to that. The mtDNA test definitely showed that the hair belonged to a relative of Sharon Rocha. So they couldn't say it 1,000,000,000% that it was Lacey's, but it definitely belonged to a relative of Lacey's mom. Lacey's mom had never been in that boat, y'all. Her sister never been in that boat, y'all. That's kind of crazy. Now, let's go to the warehouse. They bring the cadaver dogs to the warehouse, naturally so. And y'all, I mean, I just can't tell you how amazing these dogs are. One of the cases I'll tell you I used it on, the bad guy, when I interviewed him first, the dryer was going, and I asked him, "You always do the laundry?" He said, "Oh, yeah, I always do the laundry." And I could see the bed down the hallway had the comforter off, and that's what was in there, was the comforter. And I had the other detective go outside and ask his wife. I had him separate at the time, and his wife said, "He never does the laundry. I always do it." When we brought in the cadaver, we secured the scene. We brought in a cadaver dog. Days later, came in from Texas, and the cadaver dog immediately hit on the dryer and on that bed, and for obvious reasons, that's where he killed her, right? And I told you the body gives off that scent as soon as you start, as soon as you're dead, as soon as your heart quits beating. So they bring in the cadaver dog and to the warehouse, and guess what? The cadaver dog hits on the boat and the trailer, but nowhere else, not outside the building. Only on the boat and the trailer. Now, it doesn't mean specifically that it's Lacey's body. It means that something dead was in that boat and trailer. Okay, that's huge. I mean, these dogs, I believe in them. I've seen them. I know how they work. All right. Also, when they're searching the warehouse, you remember that concrete debris they found in the back of his truck? Well, they find debris from dry concrete and a water pitcher with concrete debris on the bottom of it in the warehouse. Why, you ask? Well, we'll get to it. On the ground in the warehouse, where the boat and trailer were, there were four round circular impressions made of concrete residue. Basically an imprint, y'all. You look down on the ground, you can see four circles where that have concrete residue on them. And why? I mean, they're rings, concrete rings. And the Scott says, "Oh, well, I made homemade anchors for my boat." Now, 14-foot boat, why wouldn't you just buy an anchor, right? I mean, you're going to go buy a 50-pound bag of concrete, bring it to your warehouse, mix it up with water, and even get some of it in the pitcher that's still left there, and mix it up, and you're going to make four homemade anchors for a 14-foot boat? Makes no sense. Scorched. So when they asked Scott, when Scott was asked, he was unable to produce the bucket he used to make the anchor he had in his boat. All right. And he denied making other anchors and provided three different explanations to what happened to the rest of the dry concrete. First, he said he threw it away. And then he said he didn't know what to do with it, the leftover concrete. And third, he said he dumped it into a hole in his driveway. Later on in the trial, this was deemed unlikely by both the defense and the prosecution experts. But the later on, you know, one of these private investigators would find an area in his driveway that appeared to have some concrete dumped in it. But anyway, I said 50 pounds of concrete. I'm sorry. It was 90-pound bag of dry concrete mix. Okay. And these bags are small, y'all. And I asked my buddy when we were pouring concrete one day, I'm like, why in the fuck is this small bag so heavy? Like, I mean, I might kill myself to lift it, where a bag of 40 pounds of corn is twice the size. Well, it's about the density, y'all. It's because it's so concrete, no pun intended. So compact it together. All right. If people are dieting now more than ever before, why are nearly one in three American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that doesn't turn into fat when you consume it. Instead, it turns into a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body.
So getting more MCTs in your diet is like flipping a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which flushes out excess fat and calories. And Dr. Gundry has created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it comes in a tasty drink form. It actually tastes good. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized.
So if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/RLRC and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. And again, that's GundryMD.com/RLRC.
Awesome.
All right, good deal. Do you want to set your child up for success? Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with a subject?
IXL now.
Is your child ahead,
real life,
not getting challenged enough in class?
Get an exclusive
IXL Learning is an online learning program that enriches your homeschool curriculum. It offers practice in math, English, language arts,
visit IXL.com/today
while adopting
today
to each child
to get the most
meeting them where they are.
Program
plus, IXL
the
encourages
price.
Students to be curious, empowers them how to choose to learn. Now, Cindy used IXL in the classroom as a teacher and now uses it to homeschool our youngest son in the ninth grade. The videos are what she finds that benefits him most in math because he's a very visual learner. The perfect supplement to your homeschool curriculum, IXL offers interactive practice problems, educational game lessons, and video tutorials for every topic you're teaching at home. It's easy to use, time-saving, and everything on IXL is organized by grade, subject, topic, and subtopic, making it simple to find activities for the exact skills you're covering. Instant grading, helpful progress reporting, IXL offers instant feedback and explanations of new topics as kids use the program. Flexible and personalized, kids can explore any topic in any grade level. They aren't forced into a single learning path like they are on other programs. If you're homeschooling your child because they were falling behind or because they were too far ahead, IXL is a great program to help them get the exact support they need. It's fun for kids, and kids love IXL's positive feedback, awards, and educational games. And it's trustworthy. IXL is trusted by 15 million students worldwide and has proven to improve performance in over 75 scientific research studies. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And Real Life Real Crime listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/today. Visit IXL.com/today to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price. They had a witness, a guy named O'Donnell, who said that Lacey had gone to the warehouse on either December the 20th or the 23rd. And while she was there, she used the bathroom. Okay. The police thought this was to prevent Lacey from seeing Scott Boat. And, you know, basically the warehouse was so full of shit that it was difficult to get to the bathroom in Scott's warehouse. I don't know what that's about. But search warrants again. Scott's computers both from his home and his work were seized. And I tell you, always delete your search history, and they go through them. And later on, it was termed that Scott had been looking up tidal activity in the area of the Berkeley Marina as early as December the 8th. Okay. He would explain it away, I'm sure. Well, I bought a boat and I was planning on going saltwater fishing. Let me tell you something. I go saltwater fishing. Yeah, I do look at the tides because on a fallen tide, the fish bite better and shit like that. But what they found on his computer, he's searching that area. I'm thinking if I'm going to dump a body, I probably would have searched it too. Not conclusive, but I'm just telling you what the facts are. So the home computer, they dug into it, tear it up, search it, and they find that on the morning of December the 24th, that computer was used to access the Gap, the clothing store, the Gap's website, and look at a woman's scarf, right? And there was a pop-up ad for a sunflower umbrella stand. And then Scott's personal email was accessed, and this happened between 8:40 and 8:45 a.m. Stick with it. It'll come to play later on, all right? And they execute all search warrants. They collect everything they think is evidence, and they're processing it. Meanwhile, the search is still going on. Now the media is fucking just eating it up. Remember, we got 1,500 plus volunteers at this time. They got a command center set up, the Citizens Day, at the Red Lion Hotel. And they got hotlines set up, especially at the police station. And on December the 29th, a phone call came in from a lady named Amber Fry at the police station. And she's talking to the police officer, whoever it was. And she's like, look, I'm dating a dude named Scott Peterson, and I have his date of birth. Now, look, the media coverage is everywhere now. It's worldwide, number one story in the world. And she says, I have his date of birth, and y'all are talking about this guy, Scott Peterson, that has a wife and unborn baby that are missing. And she said, I just want to know if it's the same guy that I'm dating. And she said, I've got his date of birth. And the officer said, well, I can't give you that information, and I can't give you our guy's date of birth. And she said, you don't have to give me his date of birth. I'm going to give you the date of birth, and you tell me if it's a match or not. And the officer's like, no, I can't do that. And she's like, I'm trying to help here. This dude's telling me that he's not married, his wife is deceased, and I'm dating him. And I'm sure they're getting 100 phone calls an hour, y'all. But this officer says unequivocally, no. So Amber Fry got frustrated and she hung up. And that was on the 29th. Now on December 30th, she's like, you know what? She's watching the news coverage and everything. And she's like, fuck this, I'm calling back. So she calls back and gets another officer and on the phone is trying to say the same thing. Well, just so happened, one of the detectives was standing close to that officer and heard the conversation. And was like, wait a minute. She's saying she's dating Scott Peterson and she's got the date of birth. They're on the phone right now. Let me talk to him, right? So he gets on the phone with her and talk to him. She's like, yeah, I'm dating a guy named Scott Peterson. And he told me his wife was dead. This would be his first holiday season alone. And I have his date of birth. And I believe it's the same guy. And the detective's like, you know what? Where do you live, sister? Because we're coming to interview you now. Big break coming in, y'all. And so they go to her house. And they interview her, and this is so fucked up, so scores. Amber tells the detectives that she met Scott. And they confirmed it's him, right? The same guy whose pregnant wife and unborn child, Connor, are missing. She tells them that she met Scott just back in November of 2002, the same year, like the month before Lacey and Connor go missing, she met him through her friend, Sean Sibley. She said Sean Sibley met Scott at a work conference in this around the same time in November 2002. And one day after the conference, a group of conference goers got together and had drinks in the hotel bar and watched a baseball game on TV. And they were goofing around at the bar, hanging out. And Scott Peterson, who no one knew was married, asked Sean Sibley what he should put on his name tag to help attract women. Scorched. And now, I mean, this is way before she went missing, but it didn't look good. Sean Sibley thinks about it for a moment and then said he should put "I'm rich" on his name tag, right? And they laughed about it. Scott said he was going to put HB for short, for horny bastard, on his name tag. Okay. Your wife at this time is probably 6 months pregnant. And at this point, some of the people that were Sean and Scott left thinking that their conversation was getting too flirty, right? And they didn't want to be around the bullshit. But Sean and Scott hung out for several more hours drinking, and Sean was wearing an engagement ring and told Scott that she was in a committed relationship. Well, Scott wasn't wearing a ring, y'all. And this is all this is testified by Sean Sibley. She said he wasn't even wearing a wedding ring. Now, the next day at the conference, Sean and Scott exchanged business cards, and, you know, Scott left, basically. Goes on his way. But later on, he called Sean back, or actually called her for the first time. It was a couple weeks later. And he asked her, he says, "Hey, I know you're in a committed relationship, but you got any friends that want to hook up with me or meet up with me?" And Sean thought about it. And she's like, "You know what? I got my really good friend, Amber Fry. And I think you'd be a perfect dude for her, right? You're a good-looking dude. She's a good-looking girl, what have you." So Sean and Scott talked on the phone several times, but Scott never told her he was married. And on November the 20th, Scott Peterson met Amber Fry for the first time. Or Frey, whatever. I don't know how they say her name. Amber Frey, for the first time. And during that meeting, he tells Amber, "I'm single." Okay? Now, Amber was a 26-year-old single mother herself. And she was the mother of a toddler. And now she worked as a licensed massage therapist near Fresno, California. And this is about an hour's drive from Modesto, where Scott Peterson lived. So what did? They like each other. And from that first blind date they were set up on, Scott acted like a perfect gentleman. And he bought Amber flowers, and he got a private dining room for them on their first date. Now, check that out. Amber's thinking, "Ooh, my man hooked me up with a private dining room." Well, I'm telling you, he did that because he didn't want anybody to see him in public, because it might be somebody that he was married. This is before Lacey goes missing, y'all, just a month before. And while some of Scott's supporters will try to tell you that Amber and Scott's relationship was not very serious, and that Amber and Scott went only on 4 or 5 or 6 dates, this, it isn't true, y'all. Amber and Scott did only see each other 6 times, but each time it was a multi-day visit. Get it? Like, okay, I'm going to go see her on this date, but I'm going to spend the night, and I'm going to stay a couple of days on the hookup. Now, their first date was a whole weekend together at a hotel where Scott bought champagne and strawberries. And Amber said she felt like the perfect man had walked into her life. And then by the second date, Amber was impressed with Scott. And Scott was making her dinner, and he bought presents for her daughter, the toddler. He also picked up Amber's daughter from daycare, the toddler. And it's, you know, coming close to Christmas time by now, and he even helped them get a Christmas tree. And during this time, he's courting her. That's what my daddy would call it. This, they're having this relationship. He tells Amber, hey, I want to meet all the members of your family. So I'm kind of getting ahead of myself, but not so much. But anyway, throughout their entire relationship, Scott lied. And he lied, and at first, obviously he lied about not being married. But he lied about what he did for a living and a whole bunch of other shit. And Scott made it seem like he was some sort of international businessman whose job took him around the world. Now, he tells Amber that he couldn't spend the holidays with her because he was going to go on a hunting trip. And then he's going to Maine for Christmas and Paris and Brussels for New Year's and New Year's Eve. Then he's going to Guadalajara, Mexico for work. Obviously, all this is bullshit. Okay? So in early December, Sean Sibley, the one that set him up, heard from an acquaintance that Scott Peterson was a lying motherfucker and that he was actually married, right? And then remember, he lied to Sean this whole time, and she's the one that set him up with Amber. And Sean was so shocked that she called Scott and demanded to know if he was married. Scott's a bit of a player, and he calms her down, and he said that he had been married in the past. Sean was mad as fuck and said she was going to call Amber and tell Amber that Scott was married. And Scott begs her, says, Sean, don't do this. I'll tell Amber myself. Okay? This was on December the 8th. It's the same day that the computer showed that Scott began looking at the title activity and the bay on his computer. All right? December 9th. Scott goes to Amber's house, and he's like, hey, baby, I got some very serious to discuss with you. And he cries, y'all. Now, look, he didn't cry when Lacey's missing and Connor's missing all this time, but he cries for Amber. And Amber couldn't even calm him down. Now, this is her testimony. I mean, she's got no reason to lie. But she said after a while, he finally explained that he had not been truthful with her. And then he tells Amber that he had lost his wife, and this would be his first holiday season without her. And he says that he never told Amber about this because it was such an upsetting situation. Okay? Amber says, hey, baby, I'm not mad at you for telling me this. And Scott, suddenly relieved and seemed so happy now that Amber knew the truth. And Amber pressed and says, hey, but you're not currently married, right? Scott said, no, not currently. And after this, Amber never pressed him for any more details. I mean, I get it. She thinks this is her knight in shining armor, and she didn't want to make him upset or make him talk about such a traumatic experience. I mean, remember, his wife died. He lost his wife. Gonna be his first holidays without her. Holy fuck, Scott. Amber admitted that she was not clear on whether or not this meant Scott's wife had died or that she had left him. All right, you don't want to press him. Dude's crying, and it's going to be your first holiday season without him, whatever. You don't want to lose this guy. You know, I mean, y'all have been lovers, and he's picked your kid up from fucking daycare, bought you a or helped you get a Christmas tree and wind and dined and 69'd you, whatever. All right. On December the 14th, both the Petersons and Amber had Christmas parties that they were supposed to go to. Now, Scott told Lacey that he couldn't go to the Christmas party because his boss had flown in unexpectedly from Europe. All right, baby, I can't go to a Christmas party that we're going to. My boss just flew in from Europe. I gotta go take care of his business. All right. Well, the fact of the matter is, and this is all proven, that he had already agreed to go to Amber Frey's, if I mess her name up, I apologize, Amber Frey's Christmas party. And this would become worldwide famous because there were pictures taken at the party of him and her dressed up, hugging up, and all that good shit, right? Lacey went to their Christmas party. She was supposed to go with Scott alone that evening while Scott went to Amber's boss's formal Christmas party. And that's where the photograph's taken of. And he had like a tux on, not a black tie tux, but like he was dressed to the nines. So after this party, Amber and Scott didn't talk for a while. Because, remember, Scott's an international businessman, and he's got to travel. And on December 29th, a friend called Amber to inform her that a guy with the same name as her boyfriend was accused of causing his wife's disappearance in Modesto, California. Well, Amber gets on the internet, starts to research, and she's like, holy fuck. This could be my man, right? And that's when she decided to call the task force and tell the story that I already told y'all. So when the cops meet with her, they're like, basically the meeting ends, they're like, hey, you want to go get a bite to eat? And on the way to get a bite to eat, there's like a Walgreens or whatever. There's somewhere that Amber's like, hey, can y'all stop here? I've got pictures that were being developed. Now, back then, y'all, you had to get your shit developed on 9mm film, and you had to take them into a drugstore or wherever or photo lab to get them developed. And she tells the detectives, like, hey, I got pictures of me and him at the Christmas party in here. And so they go in, guess what? The fucking pictures are ready. And they come out, she's got double prints, and the cops are looking at them, and they're like, holy fuck. Okay? Holy fuck. This is concrete proof that Scott lied to us in the first interview and said, nope, our marriage is perfect. Okay. And now, you know what else they did? They were like, holy shit. And she's like, you know, he's calling me all the time. She told him during the interview, he's calling me all the time, et cetera. And so what do? They buy a recorder to attach to Amber's phone, so anytime Scott called, the conversation would be recorded. And so they did this, they hooked it to her cell phone, and Amber agrees to recording the conversations with Scott, and she does this for the next several weeks. And including the next one, the next day, which is on December the 31st.
Hey, everybody, it's Aggo. Listen up, especially you ladies over 40. I've got some good news. It's called Hormone Harmony. Hormone Harmony is an all-in-one hormonal balancing solution. It relieves symptoms of menopause. It promotes healthy weight loss and curbs cravings. It improves sleep quality. It reduces bloating and gas. It relieves hot flashes. It can even relieve occasional mood swings, although nothing like that has ever happened in my house. Hormone Harmony isn't just for menopause. Any woman with symptoms of hormonal imbalance should take it, but it's perfect for the horrible menopause symptoms that make you put your life on hold. For a limited time, you can get 15% off on your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use code RLRC at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and code RLRC at checkout for 15% off today.
Y'all, while the recording device is in place, Scott's at a vigil that's being held, and it's a big vigil. There's video footage of it. He's at a vigil for Lacey and Connor. And you know what he does? While he's at the vigil, people are praying and singing and carrying on, you know, all this stuff for Lacey and Connor. Scott calls Amber, right? And he stays on the phone with her for 70 fucking minutes. 70 minutes. Right? That's scorched as fuck. But then it's about to get more scorched. Let me tell you why. Because during this conversation, 70-minute phone call, let's record it, y'all. Scott told Amber that he was at the Eiffel Tower celebrating New Year's Eve with his friends Pascal and Francois. And he laughs and he tells Amber about all the cool things he's been doing in France. And he's, meanwhile, y'all, he's at his fucking wife's vigil. There's no body been found yet. Connor hadn't been found yet. And, he's surrounded by all these people who are crying and carrying on. So it's a lot of noise. But Scott's going, oh, yeah, I'll maybe get this phone call plugged in for you in case you haven't heard. He's like, hey, baby, love you. I'm by the Eiffel Tower. Like, it's a lot of noise, right? Which are the people that are mourning Lacey and Connor's disappearance. He's like, yeah, baby, I'm right by the Eiffel Tower. Miss you. I'm hanging out with Pascal and Francois. Been doing all this cool shit. 70 minutes he goes on. And Amber knows he's a lying motherfucker, and she sounds like she's about to cry, but she's now, I'm sure, mad as fuck, right? And wow, scorch Scott Peterson, you got some explaining to do. But doesn't end there, y'all. That she recorded a shit ton of conversations, and some of the other conversations Scott told Amber, things such as he wanted to get a vasectomy because he was so adamant about not having any children. Scorch, Scott, you're fucking up. He even said that if Amber did want more children, and that would be a breaking point for their relationship. Scorch, Scott, you already got one, right? Connor was almost born. He said the only child he could ever think of having in his life was Amber's daughter, Ariana. A-Ayana. A-Y-I-A-N-A. Scorch, Scott, you've got Connor. You don't know what conditions he's in, but you've got him. See, all these phone calls go on for several weeks. Even after Amber does her famous press conference for the Modesto police, where she comes out and says, I've been having a relationship with Scott. I was his girlfriend during this time. Okay, that tells you how fucking crazy Scott is, that he knows about this. And we'll get into it. All right, so let me go back. Let me digress. So about a week after the New Year's call, I told y'all the Eiffel Tower and Paris call, on January 4th, Scott told Amber that he was the man who had a wife missing. Okay? Now Amber's like, oh, game on, motherfucker, and she starts to press him for information. And she says, things like, you told me you lost your wife and now your wife is missing. How am I supposed to believe you about anything? And Scott says things like, I can't talk to you about that, or I can't tell you about that right now. Amber didn't get a confession or vital information out of Scott as it relates to Lacey and Connor, right? But her recorded phone conversations absolutely go to Scott's motive and character. Scorched as fuck, okay? Their conversations continued until around February the 19th, y'all. This is months after Lacey's missing. But Amber wasn't interested in dating the motherfucker. She's playing him like he played her. And she's doing it at the request of the police. And anything, as long as you can keep a motherfucker talking, you keep them talking. And I don't care what kind of case it is. What if you're interrogating somebody, which basically this is an interrogation, but by a civilian, you keep them talking, because the more they fucking say, the worse it looks for them. And sooner or later, they're going to fuck up and say something wrong. Okay? So they continue to February the 19th. And during these conversations, like I told you, they want him to say anything, because sooner or later, you're going to fuck up. He makes odd statements such as, Lacey's baby was not his. And he tells Amber, he says, I never cheated on you, Amber. After he says that, in quotations, never cheated on you, Amber, she said, you never cheated on me? Scott, you're married. Explain that one to me. Well, there's a shit ton of these conversations and a shit ton of scorched things that Scott said to Amber. And you better believe it's like the prosecution's fucking silver bullet, if you will. And it's just unreal that what all the things that he said. Now, and I skipped to Amber, but again, I want to go back to the police called an emergency press conference, and all the reporters said, we got no fucking idea. We thought maybe they found the body. And what it was, they wanted to do a shock value and have Amber come out and say, Scott's been lying to me. I've been his girlfriend. We've been romantically involved. I think that's where the police start to fuck up, okay? Yes, you continue to use her to record. And yes, I guess they think they're at a certain point where they wanted to use Amber as a shock value to see what Scott would say after that. Well, you know what? You're fucking up. You're scorched, in my opinion, for a couple reasons. One, it worked to a certain degree. He continued to talk to her, right? And even say, I never cheated on you and all that. And the other things he said, like Connor wasn't my baby and all that. Those are great. But what if fucking Scott would have done what Woody Overton would have done? You bring my mistress out in a press conference and nobody knows about it, and she says that shit, I'm like, fuck you, bitch. I'm never talking to you again. You've been playing me all this time. And then I know, I'm assuming at this point, that you got me recorded, right? Why would you have all these conversations? Even if you didn't have me recorded, you damn well told the police everything we've been talking about. All the I love yous and the times we screwed and everything that you told me. And you start to lay the groundwork. You absolutely are laying the groundwork that the police are now only focused on Scott. It's scorched, y'all, because nobody's been found. Lacey and Connor have not been found. Why put her in the press conference? other than it's the top story in the news every day. Okay. Like the Iraq war, some shit has started and it's outdoing it. And why put her in the press conference? Why not continue to use her to continue to get phone calls? At some point he's going to want to see her again. Right. And if you want to do it, have her confront him face to face, maybe have a hidden video camera on or something. I don't know. And what you just did is you told the prosecution, or you gave the prosecution their first bullet to fire back, that you were only focused on Scott Peterson. You never looked anywhere else. And y'all, we deep diving into it. And I'm going to tell you all the things that the cops and the prosecution fucked up. Now, I don't think they did it intentionally, but they fucked it up. They scorched it. They scorched it. And I don't think they did it intentionally. I think they thought they had their man, right? But like, whoa, we got this motherfucker. All the pieces of the puzzle that I've told you all about this far, when you put it together, he looks guilty as fuck, right? But you can't ignore other things that come in. And you look, most of them are so trivial. Some of them are very, very important. But most of them are so trivial, you just go talk to this motherfucker that is saying that they saw Lacey at this spot or whatever. And we're going to get in each one of them. But I'm just telling you, go talk to them. Do your job. Disprove these people's sightings or whatever the evidence that is beneficial to Scott Peterson is. Go disprove it, all right, if it can be disproven. Go at least talk to this motherfucker. But no, now you did a surprise kamikaze motherfucker. Here's his lover press conference. Scorched. The beginning of scorched. And I'm going to stop there for today, y'all. Stay with me. We're getting into the meat of the matter. And I love and appreciate each and every one of y'all. Thank you so much for liking and listening and sharing. And November 1, all new changes for Real Life, Real Crime. Going back to all original Woody Overton business people. I'll explain it to you later. But LOPA, Louisiana Organ Procurement Agency. You don't have to be a lifer from Louisiana to sign up to be an organ donor. You can be a lifer from Maine, one of the places Scott Peterson said he was going. You can be a lifer from Maine. Go to LOPA.org, fill out the questionnaire, become a hero, be an organ donor. LOPA is a nonprofit, y'all. They do great stuff. Always be my jam. And I'm Woody Overton, your host of Real Life, Real Crime, the podcast. And until next time or ever, don't let me catch you down on Murder Bayou. Peace.
The other rights remain silent. Anything you say can and will be used against you in a court of law. You have a right to an attorney prior to or during any question. If you can't afford one, the court will appoint one for you. Do you understand your rights?